All right. Well, it looks like I'm right here. Well, it is now my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker. He comes from Fresno, California. He's part of Tuffy Paw.
Tuffy.
And his name is Zach B. So can we please offer him a warm Valley Group welcome?
All right. Hi, guys. I'm Zach, and I'm an alcoholic. Lots and lots and lots. Whole bunches. That's a young people's thing. So as Mike pointed out earlier, we do have a few events coming up, and that's what kind of keeps me sober. Just to kind of let you guys know and to qualify myself as an alcoholic, I started drinking at a really early age. I went through some really traumatic things. I was molested for a year by a babysitter and my father, who didn't remember doing it because he was too fucked up to remember. Go figure. And I kind of went through a lot of stuff, you know. I remember, like, I started showing alcoholic tendencies at a really early age. When I was in preschool, I ended up stealing a movie, The Mice and the Motorcycle. Yeah, The Mouse and the Motorcycle. And that was, like, my saving grace. I used to stay up till, like, midnight, wait until he passed out drunk, and I would watch that. And it was, like, my escape all through my preschool years. One of the things that I really kind of got a grasp of really early on was that I couldn't trust a lot of people. The people that I did kind of trust was the Olive Garden that was right next door to us, because my dad was always too drunk to feed us. The workers started kind of catching on to that, and they would feed both me and my brother. And that was something that, like, I kind of to realize that I could depend on people if I had a sob story, which, you know, I'll get into when I get into my drinking and kind of show how, like, I used that and became super manipulative. And they didn't recognize it right away. And that was, you know, one of the things that the fourth step kind of taught me, you know. And, we'll, you know, again, that's something we'll get into a little bit later. So, again, like, I went through all this really, really messed up things, and I tried to commit suicide when I was 5 years old. You know, it was, I didn't want to feel the way I was feeling, and the only time I didn't feel that way was when my dad would force me to drink so that I would go to bed early so he could go out and party. And so I understood that there was only two ways I can get out of that, and that was by drinking whatever dad was drinking, or through death, which I discovered when I had a pet mouse. Here's the pet mouse story. So I had a pet mouse that I ended up accidentally suffocating in a blanket when I was playing with him, because I was watching Mouse on the Motorcycle, and I was like, oh yeah, we can hide in the blanket. And then when I woke up, or I started screaming, my dad woke up and he was like, what the hell is going on with you, blah blah blah. And I'm like, it won't move, why won't it move? And then so my dad had to explain to me what death was. He's like, oh, it's where you don't feel a lot of these pain, like it's in a better place. And I was like, oh, that sounds awesome. Who the fuck doesn't want that? I'm like, that's where I want to be. And so I started dwelling on this, and I really kind of, like, took it to heart. And then an hour later, we had a second pet mouse, so I was like, oh, time to send you to a better home. Yeah, that happened. And that, like, messed with me for a long time, because my dad freaked out. And he was just like, why did you kill the mouse? It was so much money. $4. I was like, he's like, that could have been used for my drink. And I was like, okay, crazy guy. And I just remember, like, not understanding. I just knew that that was something I wanted. You know, I wanted that. I didn't want to feel. So when I was 5 years old, I was playing next to the street, and I threw my ball into the street, and I was like, you know, I have a feeling if that car hits me as fast as it's going, I'm not going to be able to feel anything. And so I tried to walk out. And somehow or another, my dad, who was comatose at the time, would manage to be awake, which surprised the hell out of me when he came running out into the street and all these cars start swerving around me. And then having to sit there and talk to a cop for, you know, 4 or 5 minutes about what was going on. And the cop just kind of left. And I realized I couldn't trust the cops. You know, that's when I was like, well, you were supposed to be my savior. Like, everyone tells me, like, hey, you can trust the police. At that point, I lost all respect for them. And that kind of led me down a different road later on. So then I got into high school. So I'll just flash forward, because there's not a whole lot of stuff, you know, just a lot of emotional stuff that I was kind of dealing with, trying to comprehend these feelings of demoralization, this incomprehensible demoralization, as the book calls it, trying to identify with people that didn't understand what I was feeling, because I was a unique snowflake and no one in this world could ever feel like me. And that was just kind of what I did, is I was just like, you know, you don't understand me. Like, who the fuck are you? And I would get really angry angry as soon as anyone started identifying with me. I was like, no, you didn't go through what I went through. And I would start lying to them because that was my wall. Because if you didn't know the truth, then that means you didn't know the real me. And if you didn't know the real me, then you couldn't understand. And so I did that. And I did that all the way up until high school. And while I was in high school, I met a girl who was online, right? I did that online dating thing because high school, yay high school. I started talking to this girl who lived in Alaska, and she identified, but she identified without me having to leeway into something. I didn't have to give her a sob story first. She gave me the sob story first, and she beat me to the punch. I remember being really mad about that. And I'm like, no, I'm supposed to have the sad story. You can't have a sad story. So then we got into this pissing match online about whose sob story was sadder. And then somehow or another, that ended up in a relationship. And yeah, go figure, right? And so we were on and off all through my high school career. And this is when I really realized that I could manipulate people. This is when I really started using a lot of that information that I'd kind of started to foster as a child and used it to my advantage. You know, I never had a relationship that lasted longer than a month, just because after that month, I had to start being honest, and I didn't like that. So I'd break up with them, or I'd put them in a situation where I'd cheat on them, and then they would want to break up with me, or they'd find out something about this person or something like that, and I just constantly created these fallacies in my life to kind of keep that distance. And I harbored that as a reason to hate everyone. Because, you know, I couldn't have anyone near me. And that was what I craved so desperately. So then I started hanging out with a friend of mine, who's still like a really good friend of mine. And his older brother was old enough to buy alcohol. And he was in a band. And so I was like, that's the cool thing. And, you know, and I was really into metal at the time. So I'd go with him and his friends to go to all these different shows. And that's where the partying started. And I would start getting really fucked up at these events. And I'd be out in public and no one, you know, judged me because they were all just as trashed as I was, and no one cared. And I was like, ooh, hey, look, my peeps, everyone's just as sad as I am, but no one's really showing it because we're all drunk, you know. And that was like my escape through the second part of, you know, my high school career. And it was one of those things where, like, at that point, you know, I realized really quickly that this was something I could do without having to be around people. And I started doing it alone. You know, my mom had a bottle from her second marriage, from her honeymoon, of this Russian vodka, you know. And I remember, like, stealing it. But I was smart enough to know that if you put water in there, it would freeze because she kept it in the freezer. So I never did that. My other friends did not know that. And so that's how my mom found out I was drinking her alcohol. Because they were putting water in there and I didn't know. And I remember, like, she caught me. She had me red-handed. She had, like, I had the shot glass in my hand. And I was like, no, it was my friend's. And my friend hadn't been over there in like 2 days. You know, I was like, yeah, I was just hiding it in my room and I'm just pouring it out. And I remember, like, not wanting to pour it out. I was like, I can't pour this out. You know. And my mom, you know, I remember she going, why aren't you pouring it out? And I got into a huge argument about why I couldn't pour out a shot glass when I was in high school, you know. And that was like kind of this weird sensation for me. It was like, what is so powerful about this liquid? And then I never thought of it again because I was like, well, you know what, I'll find out later. And I remember shooting it and my mom getting super mad about that. You know, I got grounded for like a week, but I didn't really care at that point because the alcohol was in my room anyway, so I could just steal more. Ended up going into the Air Force, got kicked out because my tendencies like didn't allow me to be honest. I got caught in a lie there, so I ended up getting kicked out. And their reasoning was, you and I aren't compatible, was what the officer told me when he was signing my discharge paperwork. And I was like, oh, sounds like every one of my relationships. All right. I understand. And I went about my life, and I came home, and I just became super depressed. So I didn't leave my room, and all I did was play video games. And I was starting fights at home, you know, blaming this on my mom for divorcing my dad, blaming it on my dad because she slept with my mom, which inevitably created me. You know, and I was blaming them for all of these really asinine things that just at the time made perfect sense. You know, it made all the sense in the world. And, you know, thinking back on it now, like, I can definitely see the insanity. And it was one of those things that, like, I didn't know how to rationalize completely. It was just my shield to stay away from people. You know, it was a reason to keep my family at bay because I felt like I was such a destructive force. You know, I blamed myself for ruining, you know, my dad's life, you know, so I could never be close to him. I blamed myself for keeping my mom from the man she's married to now for as long as she was, you know. Like, oh, if she had never married my dad, you know, if I wouldn't have been born, she would have never stayed with him and she would have been happier sooner. And there's a lot of these things that I just took on to myself and identified as my problem because I was a part of the situation. And just because I was a part of the situation, that instantly meant that I was at fault. Those tendencies really made it difficult for me when I first sobered up. You know, so then I ended up, my dad ended up moving up to Oregon because my grandma at the time was really sick and she was going through her own divorce, which is apparently a family trend on my dad's side. And so my dad asked me when he came down for my brother's graduation, which is the only real reason why he came to the graduation to begin with, if I would move up there with him. And I was like, you know, I'm going to do the right thing. I'm going to go try and have a relationship with him. And that was wrong. I go up there and we instantly started fighting within the month. You know, and it was, I started at that point stealing alcohol because that's what I did when I was at home to get trashed so I didn't have to feel. I started going out and, like, I was in this whole new area. I was just like, you know, I'm not going to have to deal with a lot of the problems I dealt with when I was living in Fresno because all my problems are in Fresno, you know. And I thought that that was how you escape problems, was just start over. Again, completely wrong. And I was up there and I remember starting, I met one man, and this guy, like, changed everything, Willie. And Willie and I, he met me at a party, right? It was the first party I'd been to. And he's like, oh, we drink at my house all the time. And I was like, oh, that sounds great. And then I never left his house for the next 2 months. And I stayed drunk literally almost every day. You know, I only went home to get cigarettes from my dad because I didn't have a job, you know. And I would only go up there when he needed the car so he can go grocery shopping. Other than that, like, I was always at this guy's house, and we started, you know, getting into other products as well as alcohol, and that I just constantly used one thing or another. If it got me messed up, if it isolated me, that's what I wanted. And I got the spins for the first time, hated it. Everyone else says they love it. I hated it. I drank to be beyond that. So I was definitely a blackout drunk. That was my happy area. If I was buzzing, I wasn't happy because I could feel still. So if I didn't remember, I knew it was a good night. For me, at least. Not for the house I was at or any of the people I were around. And it sucked. It really sucked because after 2 months of doing that, you know, he said I had to leave for a while. And I was like, what the hell? I thought we were having fun. You know, I thought you were my friend. Because that's what friends do, right? You give and take. You share everything you have. I'm sharing everything I got, which was nothing. And he thought, you know, I just thought he was just being a dick. And I remember telling him that. We got into this huge fight, and I remember starting to drive home and being too drunk to drive. So I passed out in my car, and that started a whole new chapter where I would drink and sleep in my car. You know, I would go from party to party, and I would take a bottle that I didn't buy and leave. You know, I would leave the party and be like, I don't deal with these squares. You know, screw these guys. They're having too much fun. And I'd go drink in my car and get drunk on the side of the road someplace and sleep there. And I did that for another 2 or 3 months, you know, before I started getting in touch with some other people, which inevitably led to the sister program, substances. And I started getting into some really crazy situations, you know. I thought I was gangster as hell. And I'm super white, so it doesn't work out. But I thought it was okay, you know, because in Oregon, everyone's white. So I was just the darkest white person. That was my thought. And it was so wrong. I remember kicking in one door, and there was a shotgun pointed at me. And I was like, you won't? You won't? And they were like, I will. I totally will. And they shot behind me. And I was like, and I'm out. And I changed my lifestyle because that was too much for me. I'm like, nope, too white for this. Not my stick. And I stopped. And then I went straight into alcohol. And that was my only thing. I was like, no, I don't do drugs anymore. That's not my, no, I'm not okay with this. I almost got shot. That's not cool. You know, and I just completely wimped out of that. And I was just like, okay, I'm going to do this. And I remember at one point, there was this girl I was dating. You know, I was 20 and she was 16, so super illegal. But I was too drunk to care. And then her mom and I got to talking one night. Turns out she was 14, and I was like, no. And I left that night. I was just like, out. Deuces, you know. And the mom lied to me for 2 months. That was the crazy part. Turns out she got sober about 2 years ago, so she was one of us too, you know. And that was just like, she thought that she could give her daughter a better life by like forcing a marriage upon her or something. I don't know. We do crazy things, and I've done my share of crazy things. At which point, you know, I ended up going to jail for getting in a fight with her ex-boyfriend who was dating her at the time, you know, because it was like, that's my girl, but I don't want to date her. But you're in my backyard, so I don't know. Ego is really the start of that. It's a lot of ego. And so I got in a fight with this guy while being really drunk. And went to jail for a week. You know, luckily some of my old friends from before I got shot at were in there. And they were like, oh, hey, fresh meat. But you're cool because you sold us stuff, so we'll protect you. And I remember there was a fight that broke out because I guess I said the wrong thing to the wrong person. Don't remember this because I was drinking prison wine. And go figure. And he got stabbed, like right in front of me. And I was like, this is not okay with me. I need to go back to California. And I remember like using my one phone call to call my mom and say, hey, I'm in jail. I get out in 2 days. My court date's a day afterwards. I should be done in a week. And like clockwork, in 1 week, my mom came up there with my her cousin, who I used to call my uncle, came up there and picked me up. And I left, and I was like, sweet, new beginning again. No problems. And I was wrong. Again, you know, I got a job within the first day of me being back in town. I also got a bottle. So that job lasted all of 2 weeks before I was too drunk to go into work one day. And they fired me. And I was like, hey, just give me a second chance. And they were like, we haven't heard from you in 2 days. And I was like, what? My shift was this morning. They're like, and the morning before. And I was like, I don't remember this. They're like, yep, we won't remember you either. Have a good day. And I was like, okay. So collected my last paycheck and then got another job as a server. And at this point, you know, I was going into work drunk all the time, you know, because everyone there was high on something. If it wasn't alcohol, it was other stuff. And so, like, everyone just thought I was normal. And so they kind of, you know, co-signed my bullshit, as they say. And they made me feel like everything I was doing was okay. And I couldn't figure out why this feeling that I'd been chasing since I was a kid was so outside of my reach, why I couldn't ever find it, why this hole that just seemed to go forever, this feeling of uselessness, these ideas that I was never going to amount to anything more than what I was, were always there. Every time I closed my eyes, I saw another failure from that day or from the day before or from some other time. And I stayed stuck in the past. And I could never move beyond it. All I could do was drink because that was the only thing I knew how to do. It was the only thing I felt like I was good at. You know, I could put down a half gallon in one night. That makes me better than you at drinking, and that's about it. And that was all I did. And then I found a girl. Because, you know, finances and romances. And I ended up telling myself when I started dating her, like, hey, I'm not going to cheat on you. And I cheated on her within a week because I was drunk at a party and some girl started giving me affection, and that's all I wanted, was to feel loved. And I could never find that anywhere but at the bottom of a bottle. And I lost it. I couldn't believe that I'd done that. And so I hid it and I lied, you know, and I did that for another 2 or 3 months. And then we broke up And I was like, well, that's okay. I've still got Jack, you know, and Jack loves me. Jack's there every night. And there you go. We know who our whiskey drinkers are. And that's what I stuck with. And I just kind of kept going to that. And for the next 6 months, I lost 2 jobs, dropped out of college, got back into college and dropped out again. And don't remember more than maybe 2 or 3 days. You know, one of my coworkers who I work with right now saw me during that time. And when she first met me again, you know, when she got hired on, she was like, oh, yeah, do you remember that day I picked you up when you were first moved back from Oregon? And I was like, what are you talking about? I haven't seen you since high school. And she was like, no, we hung out for like a week straight. And I was like, oh, yeah. I remember getting in a car one time at like 1 a.m. to go to 7-Eleven, I think. And that was the extent of it. And then that realization that actually just happened to me 6 months ago was really, really big for me, because I was like, holy shit, I've come a long ways. I remember things now. You know, like I can remember yesterday. I can remember 2 weeks ago. I can remember my last drink, which is just under 2 years ago. So that, it, for me, was a really big thing, actually. My last drink, I should say, because that's my sober date. My last drink was 5 years ago on June 13th. Yeah, so that was a long time ago. Holy cow. Whew. But yeah, so it was just one of those things where, you know, we broke up. I stayed drunk for 6 months, back to my story. And I started talking to her again because I started obsessing. Like, I would sleep with other women and I would throw up afterwards because I'd start thinking about her. And I was like, what's wrong with me? Why am I obsessing? And alcoholic tendency kind of showing its head again, you know, my obsession. You know, if I wasn't obsessing about drinking, I was obsessing about people or finances. And at this point in my time, I was financing or obsessing over my finances, but mostly, you know, my romance. So she said, hey, I can't be with you as long as you're drinking. And one thing that's always kind of baffled me is why people haven't heard of the program, because I see it all over TV. You know, maybe that's just me. Maybe that was just a sign from my higher power letting me know, like, you're going to need this at some point. Because I remember being like 7, 8 years old watching some sitcom. I think it was like Friends or Seinfeld or something. I don't remember. And I just remember them talking about AA. And I was like, oh, I don't know what that is. You know, my mom, having been a part of the sister program, you know, she has just over a decade clean. So she had told me about it, you know, all of those last 6 months. Like, she was just like, you're an alcoholic. You need to go see meetings. I was like, who's meetings? I don't want to see them. They sound gay. Like, that's stupid. Why would I want to sit in this room and, like, be super depressed? I do that enough by myself. I don't need to be around other people and do that. Sounds like suicide waiting to happen. Like, I was super, like, I found all the reasons in the world not to go. And then she came along and said, you need this. And I was like, okay, yeah, you're right. And I went into a room and I walked myself in there, and she was my higher power, and I never wanted to see that, you know. And I was in there for about a month just complaining. Jesus Christ, people think I complain now. They have no clue. No clue. Like, I was so bad then. Like, I was Chicken Little on crack. Like, straight up. Like, it wasn't just the sky falling, the earth was falling too. Like, I was screwed. And it was bad, you know. So then I met my first sponsor, Alex. And I remember one day I went out to go smoke a cigarette in the middle of the meeting, and he followed me out there, and he's just like, you know, if you keep leaving, you're never going to hear what you need to hear. I go, I'm not leaving. I'm just out here smoking a cigarette. He's like, well, you're not in the room, right? I'm like, yeah. He's like, so you left the room, right? I'm like, I mean, I'm still at the meeting. And he's just like, yeah, but you're not in the room, so you left. Stop arguing. And I was like, all right, fine, whatever. He's like, great. Do you have a big book? And I said, no. And he shoves his big book in my hand. He's like, great. You can borrow mine so you can get one. Okay, cool. And he gave it to me, and he was like, oh, there's one more thing I want to tell you. You know, as long as the world looks and smells like shit, it's because your head's up your ass. If you want to get it out of your ass, you got to keep reading the book. Then you pick it up and keep reading, because the answer's there. And I was like, oh, I like to read. This is the driest stuff I've ever read. Kudos to everyone who makes it through. I made it through after a year. It took me a long time to read the whole first part of the book because I was like, this is way too dry and it's written in Old English. You know, so it's just not my cup of tea. And I just kind of, I just remember him kind of taking me through the steps, and I did it. I was as honest as I could be at that point. And while we were going through, I made a lot of really big realizations. You know, the fourth step at that point, as small and as half-assed as it was a really huge pivotal point for me because it taught me to start looking at myself from the middle ground and not from the left or the right. You know, it taught me to actually see the truth in the situation, that all these evil things that I thought I had done, you know, all these things that I thought I was the victim in was all just perception. You know, how you perceive things is what it's going to be, and that was something he taught me. And one of the things that I was able to learn was that I am my father's son, and that is okay. That I don't have to blame him for being born and hating him for being born. You know, that I am okay exactly as I am now. That I am exactly who I need to be and I am where I need to be. That no matter how many times I travel and I try to find a new place and I try and do these new things, it's gone forever, that I will be okay. That I am and doing and am doing exactly what I need to be doing. And that was one of those things that really kind of helped keep me out of a lot of really dark spots. You know, I had to deal with my great-grandma's death right off the bat. I think I was a week and a half sober, and she died, you know, while I was holding her hands, and I didn't know if I was going to stay sober. And the first person I called, you know, was Alex, and that's why he asked me to be his sponsee. Well, he told me I was his sponsee, and it was because I had reached out to him, and he said, you know, that's the first step. That's the first thing you need to be able to do is know when you're in trouble and know who and how to ask to get out of it. And I was like, well, I didn't know that there was a correct way to ask. And he's like, well, yeah, you got to open your mouth, fucker. And I was like, oh, duh. And that was how we talked to each other. You know, he's an old, crotchety old Vietnam vet. So, like, all of my sob stories that I gave him, he just laughed at. He was just like, oh, yeah, you saw someone get stabbed. I saw someone burning. And I was like, oh, well, you one-up me, sir. And he's just like, yeah, so we've all had it bad. Get over it. You know, and it was just like, it was really cool to be put in my place that way. It was something I'll never forget, you know. Like, I wasn't the saddest person in the room. You know, I wasn't the most destructive person in the room, you know, that I wasn't the most screwed up person in the room or the craziest either, you know, and that's something I get to enjoy when I come to meetings is I get to hear newcomers and thank you guys for being here. I really appreciate that because I get to see where I came from. I get to see a lot of myself in you. You know, it doesn't matter who or how old you are. Like the good news is that anyone with time will tell you that your story is their story at some like level, you know, and we all get to come in here and share those things. And that was what saved me. That was my true companionship. And that was something I didn't even fully grasp until just recently. You know, this last Thanksgiving, and you know, I'll end with this. Yeah, that's right, you're going to cry. I never really understood what family was, you know, and this was something that I didn't know how to handle. And I was super depressed this last Thanksgiving because everyone had something to go and do. And I didn't want to go to a meeting because I was just going to realize once more that I was alone because there was no one there that I knew. And a friend of mine, you know, calls me up and goes, hey, what are you doing? I said, I'm not really doing anything. He's like, all right, cool. I'll be there in 5 minutes. Be ready. And he picked me up and we went over to his house. And his middle daughter came up to me when we were sitting there. I'd been there for maybe 5-10 minutes. I was playing this game on my phone, trying to avoid feeling and acknowledging my emotional state because I'm still kind of used to running away. That's my MO, getting run, you know. And Macy came up to me. She sat down to me. She goes, why are you here? I was like, because your dad picked me up. She looks at me and goes, oh, well, Dad says you don't have any family. And I was like, yeah, that's right. I don't have any family in here. You know, the ones that I do have that are blood family live up in Oregon, and I don't really consider them family. And she was like, oh, okay, cool. So you're spending Thanksgiving with us? And I was like, yeah. And she's like, great, we'll be your family. And I about lost my shit. I was like, nope, done. game. And I was just like all in this thing. And I started tearing up and I didn't know how to handle it. And she like kind of kept staring at me and nodding her head like she was like the coolest kid on the block. And I just remember looking at her like, you smug little brat. I was like, and she was just like, it's okay to cry. And then she gives me a hug. And I was like, damn it. And I about keeled over. And his wife came out and looked at me and was just giving me this weird look like emotions and walked away. And I was, I remember looking at her and like starting to tear up going, oh, Macy, I love you so much right now. And she was never like that again. Ever. Instantly just the biggest brat. Oh, it's so crazy, but I love her, you know. And I remember, you know, later on we ended up going to the family's house and it was super dysfunctional. And I was like, this reminds me of home. This is like super heartfelt and I felt comfortable. And you know, the guy I was with, he was kind of going through some shit, and we went out to his car, and we sat down, and I was about to cry, because, like, all I could think about was, I could just hear Macy saying that over and over in my head, and I was like, dude, your daughter fucked me up, and he was just like, what? And so I told him what happened, and we both sat there, we teared up, and we're, like, holding it in, like, because we're men, and, we don't want to feel, and we just sat there, we stared outside the front window, just staring at the pool, going, it's a nice day to go swimming. Yeah, totally, let's go swimming. And all I could think in my head was like, no one can see me cry if there's already water in my eyes. And we ended up going swimming for obvious reasons. We say it's for the kids, but, you know, we know the truth. And it was the first time I felt a part of. And this program gave it to me. You know, I would have never had that, and I would have never had that opportunity to be able to see some of my friends go through some of the stuff they're going through, like my roommate's going to be having a kid here soon, you know, and he asked me to be a part of his wedding, you know, and my sponsor asked me to be a part of his wedding, because after 10 years of being married, he actually wants a wedding. And, you know, I get to be a part of these really beautiful events that I never in a million years thought I'd be included at. And I get to be sober and remember them. And that in itself is its own blessing. You know, so if there's anything you can take from this, it's you're not as crazy as you think you are, because I'm probably far worse. You know, you're not as screwed up as you think you are, because I can try and one-up you all I want. And that's just the way things go. If you want the help, it's there. You just got to open your fucking mouth. And if you need help, there's always going to be someone who will listen. So I hope you guys got something from this. And again, thank you guys for having me.